I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springson Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringson.com, of course. I tell you, we're going to have a great show for you tonight. You're not stuck with me by myself tonight. We have Mr. Dale the Truth Gillespie, as always, on Wednesday night with us. How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay, my friend. How are you?
Doing pretty good, man. Fair warning to people, I've been fighting this horse crap again. I've got the Kentucky crud moving into my voice.
Well,
so.
I'm going to stay on the other side of the screen from you then, Ed, because my wife has had the flu for a few days. I'm trying to stay away from you and her.
It's actually pretty funny because I always feel good. I mean, I felt great when I couldn't talk. It's just for some reason this drainage thing kicks in. The way this weather goes in Kentucky is really nuts.
Yeah, and I'm trying to take the vitamin C and fight it. Like I said, she's had the flu for like 4 days now. I'm trying to stay away from her.
Wow, that's bad. Yeah. You know, we got a lot to talk about.
Let's do it.
You know, I want to mention one quick story before we get into the good stuff with the hemp bill and all of that. But you're familiar with Waverly Hills, right?
Oh, yeah.
A big announcement today. I really wasn't expecting it, and actually caught me off guard because I didn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of made me kind of weird for me, but the owner of Waverly Hills Sanatorium has now filed a rezoning request.
Oh, wow.
He wants to redevelop Waverly Hills and turn it into a 120-room hotel,
oh,
a conference center, restaurant, and a liquor bottling business. Now, I was kind of surprised by that because for people who don't know, I can't believe nobody does these days, but Waverly Hills is one of the most haunted places to visit in the United States.
Yep.
You know, it's in the top three. So, you know, when you look at that, here you're going to take this place. It used to be an old tuberculosis hospital. That's where they sent people to die with TB, basically, and shut down. It's haunted. There's all kinds of hauntings that go on there. They have, you know, thousands of people every year that go through there on a tour. I just thought that was a really interesting situation just for fun. You know, they're going to need a bunch of money and
yep.
tax incentives and everything else. We're talking about millions. And I'm not really sure that. I don't know about you, man. I'm not sure that is a place I would go to a hotel and have a conference with, considering, you know, the medical history there and the hauntings as well. I just thought it was funny. I wish them the best of luck because Waverly Hills is a fantastic place if you're into that kind of thing. But I just wanted to mention that for fun, because I think there's a lot of people that may be interested in something like that, you know?
No, I hadn't heard about it. I mean, I grew up just right in the shadow of that, saw it every day going up and down Dixie Highway growing up, and it seems like at least the last two or three owners, they've tried a few different ideas, and, you know, not a sidebar here, but do you remember when they had the crazy idea that they were going to build the next biggest statue of Jesus after Rio? You remember that one?
Oh, yeah, I do. That was wonderful.
And that went nowhere, so I expect, you know, I don't want to sound like a Debbie Downer on the Mr. Waverly Hills owner there, but I expect this to go nowhere also.
Well, I don't expect it to go too far either. I mean, they've tried all kinds of things in the past to try to get this. They use the tour money. I think they get something like 10,000 people a year that goes through there at $22 a person, and they use that money to refurbish it. So they've actually put new walls on and other things in there. It's pretty interesting that they're going to turn a haunted house, one of the top haunted houses, into into this hotel conference center. I'm just not sure there'd be much business that would really want to go there, considering everything else we have there. Our good friend Paul Holligrove was stopping. He put in a chat so they could call it the Bill Clinton Hotel and Massage Bar. I think that's kind of cute.
Yeah, I think they got that down in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Yeah, there you go. You know, and there's something about Barbara Shanking can have her office there, too. Guess so. On to some great news, though. You know, I was kind of curious what was going to happen here. As we know, we had this religious freedom bill in Kentucky. I believe it was House Bill 279. The religious freedom bill was voted almost unanimously and sent to Governor Beshear for a signature. It was an almost unanimous vote in the House and the Senate here in Kentucky. And Governor Beshear decided to veto the bill anyway, trying to say that this was going to cause harm down the road, blah, blah, blah. The guy has probably never read the bill, so we know that was a joke. That was just a way for him and his good buddy, Mr. Lieutenant Governor Jerry Abramson, to cater to the LGBT and some other people in this state. Well, it turns out the one thing I was curious about is if the Democrats would have enough guts to stand up and override his veto.
Yep.
And lo and behold, we expected the Senate to override it. That was going to be the easy part. The House was a problem because the House was Democratic controlled. The original bill passed the House 82-7, so that's a total of 89 votes. And the veto, they overrode the veto by Governor Beshear, the Democrats did, and the vote was 79-15. So they had some people switch over, you know, but that's still one hell of a lead. What do you think about this religious freedom bill?
Well, I can kind of see both sides of it. I know we get into this debate, and on one side, I'm not one of the people who are running around, you know, like the religious zealots, saying that everybody is out to get us for being quote-unquote religious. But on the other hand, I also think that people should be allowed to use their freedom of speech and their freedom of religion. And I think when you heard Stan Lee on the floor of the State House talking about it, he gets a little misguided sometimes. For the most part, he's pretty constitutional, and he was saying things like, oh, they're even taking God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm still trying to get the neocons to understand that the Pledge of Allegiance was written by a socialist. Maybe one day we can get them all to understand that a socialist wrote the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'd rather pledge allegiance to the Constitution than a stupid flag. But that being said, I agreed with him that you should be able to practice your religion, your free speech anywhere. And on one hand, we kind of get nervous anytime all the politicians agree on something. And a lot of Democrats, like you said, had the balls to stand up on this. And the fact that Papaw Beshear and Little Greg, the mayor of Louisville now, the fact that Little Greg and Papaw were both against it made me like it even more.
Well, I agree with you. And what's really interesting here is how this supposedly has turned into an ACLU battle. The LGBT is involved. All these other, you know, self-serving factions have jumped onto this. And, you know, what everybody, most people don't even think about or realize anymore is this bill is actually sponsored by Representative Bob Dameron out of Nicholasville. And the reason that he sponsored this bill was basically to help the Amish.
Yep.
You know, the Amish were, they ended up being forced to put, you know, golden triangles, bright orange safety triangles on their buggies and things like that so they could be better seen by motorists. But what's really interesting is, you know, one of the biggest religious beliefs of the Amish is that you don't call attention to yourself.
Yep.
You don't call attention to yourself. So they took this as a sign of calling attention to themselves, and it violated their religious beliefs. So a lot of Amish men went to jail. So, you know, rather than go ahead and comply with the law, they went in and went to jail. So this bill was designed to let them be free to practice their religion. You know, then all of a sudden it really got crazy because you got the LGBT stepping in here trying to say it was going to hurt the gays and lesbians and all that stuff. You got the ACLU in there trying to say that, you know, this was going to be going to take this thing and make it court cases go crazy because everybody's going to hide behind religious beliefs. And it's really not what it's doing. All it's doing is basically finalizing and making sure that we're adhering to what the Supreme Court has already ruled on back in the 90s. They were just kind of
the funny
language.
Thing about the. The funny thing, not ha-ha, but ironic about the Amish situation is I can remember talking to a couple Amish families who would stand up against these stupid motor vehicle laws that we have. And I've always said if we can get a few people to get their nose under the tent, so to speak, maybe we can all stop giving in to the state on this fraudulent state motor vehicle registration crap when it doesn't do anything to register it except help them track you. And when you renew your driver's license, they don't give you another test. So Meemaw's 95 years old and the AARP aren't going to ever let her get tested. So, you know, that being said, the Amish, I can remember them coming down to the Take Back Kentucky meeting, and one of them was having one of these lawsuits about having to have the lit flashing things on their vehicles. And of all groups, the ACLU was representing them in court.
See, that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. The ACLU, the Fairness Alliance, all these guys, to me, they're hypocrites. You know, even though I might agree with some stances with the LGBT, I still think they're hypocrites. Because they want to impose their will upon other people so that other people don't have the freedom to choose whether to accept it or not. You know, all because they say their freedoms are being trampled on. And that drives me nuts. And you've got Representative Darrell Owens right here out of Louisville. This guy's an idiot. I mean, he's an idiot. This guy don't care about anything but special interest money and maintaining his seat in the Congress. And I tell you, there's no better example of that than what he said. He said that he had heard of no one's religious rights being trampled on in Kentucky, so there was no reason for House Bill 279.
Darrell Owens doesn't get out of the West End. I like to call him Jesse Owens because he runs like a marathon runner if someone tries to confront him in Frankfurt. You know how that is. But he doesn't know anything goes on once you get past, like, 10th or 11th Street. He doesn't know anything exists that side of West End. So he's looking out for his own people. And I guess if some of those black reverends came something to him and the black reverends were lobbying for it, he would have been for it. But since, I guess, no black reverends came with their hands out and wanted something in return, he didn't think it was an important bill.
Well, I guess not. And, you know, this Amish story made national headlines. This Amish story has been in front of the daggone Congress before here in Kentucky. So for Darrell Owens to say that he knows of no one's religious rights being trampled on is a flat-out lie.
Yep.
If he didn't know about that, then he's not showing up to work. That's
right.
As simple as that. So this guy, I just love when I see stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, and, of course, we've got an interesting conversation going on in the chat room now about churches should be taxed. You're not going to get
that. I think
that
nobody should be taxed. It's called legalized theft, but go ahead.
Well, I understand. And that's Raiden in the chat room is the guy putting that out. And you know what? I'll be honest with you, Dale. This is where we would disagree. If we're going to force taxes, and they do on each and every one of us, I agree that nobody should be taxed. But if they're going to force taxes on us, I don't think a church should be exempt.
Well,
I think if I've got to pay taxes for my business, and a church is nothing more than a business, then they should have to pay taxes as well.
I understand the argument, but, you know, with the short time and energy and space that we take up on this planet before we all rot away, I just don't think it's an effort worth pursuing. I think if the gentleman in the chat room or yourself want to pursue it, that's fine. I personally think I'd rather go the other way and start lowering taxation on everybody, and good luck getting that done with our Congress. So I just think it's a hip thing to say in the left wing, the agnostic, atheistic left. It's a hip thing to say to tax the churches, but, you know, what about the universities then? That's basically their churches, the universities. Are we going to start taxing them too?
I'm totally with that. I think if you're going to have taxation for us, you should have taxation for everybody. I don't care if that's a university. I don't care if that's a church. I don't care what it is. You know, the church buys land and owns land. I've got to pay real estate taxes on my house. They don't. If something happens at church, you know, as our good friend Stop had pointed out in the chat room, you know, they're getting police and fire protection. You know, they're not paying for it. I am. So my taxes continue to go up to subsidize them. And, of course, we haven't even talked about the Catholic Church and the pedophile priest and the millions and millions of dollars of the contributions that went to satisfy those lawsuits. So, you know, but I totally agree with the sentiment that churches should have to pay taxes as well if we're going to have taxation. You know, I would love to go with you and say that, you know, we need to eliminate taxes altogether, because I agree with that. But as long as we're going to have a tax society, then make it equal across the board, because I just think that's ridiculous. But that's enough on that subject. What mm-hmm. really gets me here on this overriding Governor Beshear was the majority of Democrats doing this. And I tell you why, Dale.
Show some balls.
Well, it shows balls. But here's where I want to see if they're going to have more balls.
Mm-hmm.
They actually did do the one thing I didn't think they were going to do this session. I thought Greg Stumbaugh was going to get his way and kill it. And I guess the backlash got to him and the pressure mounted, but they finally allowed a vote on industrial hemp. And it passed the Kentucky legislature in the last few minutes of the regular session last night. It's pretty telling, because with industrial hemp being passed, now this bill has been passed. Now it's got to go to the governor for his signature. Now we know that Governor Beshear and Greg Stumbaugh have both been against industrial hemp all the way through, have done everything they could possibly do to keep this from coming to a vote. Now that it has passed, does Beshear have the balls to try to veto again, and does he take the risk of being overridden twice in a row?
Well, remember, there's three things that he can do, and a lot of people don't realize this in the state constitution. Number one, he can sign it. He can sign the bill and try to jump on a bandwagon. And you know, Papaw, he'll try to take credit, and he'll probably come up with some way that he was really for it before he was against it, before he was for it. So he can sign it. Or like you say, he can be a complete ass and he can veto it. But what a lot of people don't know is, since it's already passed the Senate and the House, if it just lays on his desk and it goes past 7 days and he neither signs it nor vetoes it, it becomes law without his signature.
Oh, exactly. And that's what I'm wanting to know. I'm wanting to see if he has the guts to try to veto this, or if he's just going to ignore it, let it pass on its own merit.
I wouldn't be surprised if he let it just sit there. I don't know the last time that I had to do my research. Maybe Paul, our Cart research, can find out. I don't know the last time that that somebody had a piece of legislation to become law without the governor signing in our state. But I'm kind of on the ropes, just like he probably is. He probably doesn't want to sign it nor veto it, so he might silently just try to let it lay there, because, like I said, if he vetoes it, he faces the wrath of a million angry hemp supporters. But he can refuse to sign it, and it just become law without his signature. So the governor's listening to the show, and I think Papaw, he might listen to the show in between Hee-Haw and Matlock reruns. And I think number one is your best route, Governor Peepaw. If you want to sign a law or the bill into law and ride the wave of hemp support, you know, you can take all the credit. I'm like Ronald Reagan. I don't care who gets the credit as long as we get it done.
Right. Well, you know, and I'm with you there. But this makes it real interesting. It's going to be done. There's no doubt about that. I'm just curious. I mean, my curiosity tells me, you know, is he going to veto this or let it sit and just become law on its own? Because, you know, the hemp bill actually passed by an even wider margin, if you can believe it, than the religious freedom bill. I mean, it passed out of the House. Yeah, it passed out of the House 88-4, and it passed out of the Senate 35-1. You know, so this is going to be real interesting. He's between a rock and a hard place.
Yep.
I think if his veto wouldn't have been overridden on a religious freedom bill, he would veto this in a heartbeat and take that chance. But his political clout, if you will, is basically done. I mean,
well, he's between, he has not. Yeah,
and
you say he's between a rock and a hard place, and realistically, he's between on one side about 90 to 92% of the people in the state. And on the other side is the FDA and the state police. He doesn't want to tick off the police in the state So, you know, he's worried about them. And again, it's job security for them. It's the same thing with the marijuana thing. I know you and I might disagree on that, but if they legalize marijuana, who's going to suffer? I mean, nobody has ever killed anybody because they were smoking marijuana. Nobody has ever done any heinous crimes because of their smoking marijuana. But yet they want to keep it illegal because it's big money for the DEA. It's big money for police departments. So that's the rock and a hard place that Governor Peepaw is between, 90 to 92% of the populace in Kentucky and the DEA and the state police on the other side.
Well, and that's it. And, of course, we've already had the feds. We had one of the Bill Clinton's cabinet members come in and testify that anybody who couldn't tell the difference between industrial hemp and marijuana was basically an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there is no way you can confuse the two. He even pointed out, you know, the reality is that no marijuana dealer is going to put their marijuana in a field full of industrial hemp because it'll dilute the product, so they'd get shot for selling a bad product, you know. So, I mean, we've got all these things that prove that industrial hemp is good. And as far as legalizing marijuana, which is not the same thing.
Nope.
We probably would disagree to an extent, but that extent would be a small one, because if you can legalize it and regulate it the way that you do alcohol, and have it set to the same standard, I'm okay with that.
Well, I'm in the speak when I say that, because the true term I should use is decriminalize. Because
that's where I was going, because
decriminalization is where you should go. Go ahead.
Yeah, decriminalization I'm totally with. And, so that's the thing for me. Decriminalize, I can go with that in a heartbeat.
Yep.
That's going to be really interesting to see how that one does. You know, and another thing that's really interesting, too, if you really want to know what's going on and why we continue to have these asinine laws, you know, as always, one of the things that I tell everybody to do is follow the money.
Yep.
Follow the money, and you'll know why we do things the way that we do. Well, you can go to alternet.org, folks. They've got a great story up there on drugs and why, you know, they're fighting pot so bad. You had 8 former DEA chiefs that signed a letter to U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder this month demanding that the feds crack down on Washington and Colorado. As you guys know to listen to the show, Washington and Colorado were the ones who legalized marijuana. So that was a big thing. So they wanted them to crack down on that. And, of course, Eric Holder's following through with that. But what they're not telling you is that of these 8 people that sent these letters in, one was former DEA chief Peter Bensinger.
Yep.
He was the DEA chief from 1976 to 1981. The other was Robert DuPont. He was the White House drug chief from 73 to 77. They run a corporate drug testing business, Bensinger, DuPont, and Associates. They're the 6th largest in the nation. They're the ones who give you the pee stick for 10 million employees around the United States. They get paid to drug test you for marijuana.
Yep.
These are the former DEA chiefs. They're tied into this system. It's all political as hell. And they're getting paid to do that for 10 million employees around the U.S. every year. Who are their players? Kraft Foods, American Airlines, Johnson & Johnson, the FAA, and oh yeah, the people who got to make this decision, the Justice Department itself. So do you think Eric Holder is going to sit here and give these and not go after Colorado and Washington? Of course he's going to go after them. This is nothing but a scam for money from lobbyists and people trying to make money after they get out of office. That's all there is to it. It's hilarious to me. It really is. And that's something that a lot of people aren't paying attention to.
Yep.
So, you know, we're going to start watching a little bit of that going forward. Let's grab one quick call here, Dale, before we head to break. This is our 805 number. Is this Mayo?
That it is.
How you doing, sir? What can we do for you?
Oh, pretty good. A little bit of news, and also just kind of couldn't believe what Dale had just said. I mean, if you look at, you know, bootlegging, Al Capone, the gangsters and everything, and that was just alcohol, how many deaths, violence, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So the illegal side of marijuana, I'm not talking about the guy grows a plant in his backyard or something and, you know, for his own recreation, but yes, you can't tell me the drug trade is not violent. I mean,
no, that's not what
Dale said.
Why
is it violent? Is it violent over the drugs or is it violent over the illegality of the drugs?
There you go. I mean, that's what Dale was saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dale, let me speak for you for just a second, but what Dale was saying, Mel, wasn't that there wasn't violence with these drugs, but the violence is caused from the illegality of it. You take the illegality of it away and you legalize it, then you don't have these drug wars between rival drugs.
Right.
Is that right, Dale?
Yeah, you're right, Ed. The point I would make to you, Ed, and Mayo, and the audience is look at other drugs, and you got to wrap your mind around not what the government calls an illegal drug, but just what is a drug. We know that caffeine is a drug. We know that nicotine is a drug. We know alcohol is a drug. So did we get less crime after we legalized alcohol again, after they got rid of the stupid prohibition? Did we get less crime, or did the gangsters find something else to do? And then you take the other flip side of that, look at cigarettes, look at nicotine. Nicotine has been legal for a long, long time. How many crimes are committed over cigarettes?
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, unless you're in prison and you're a prison bitch, believe me.
That's different,
you
yeah.
New York paying $15 a pack.
Yeah,
if you could sell in New York, you could be an outlaw bootlegger in New York because they want so much for them. I mean, heck, you can make good money if you're brave and want to stand up to the Gestapo of the New York State Police. You could go and
you don't have to be that brave in New York.
Don't
you just got to have cash in your pocket to pass out to get the job.
You could load a truck up in Louisville and Dixie Highway and drive to New York, and you'd have enough money for several months.
You know what? You probably could. You know, but that, you know, everybody is greased anymore, and that's just the truth of it. They're greased right here in Louisville. Go down to the Belle of Louisville area at night, or go down to 4th Street Live after hours and see what's going on down there with what's really going on with the police and people that are down there. You're either getting greased or you're getting beat up, but that's another story for another night. This deal here, though, when we talk about the hemp bill, when we talk about marijuana, you know, Rand Paul, we talked a little bit about that last night. You know, Rand Paul has been talking about the decriminalization of marijuana, you know, because we're killing, you know, we're basically destroying, you know, kids and their future. And, you know, he used the example that Barack Obama and George Bush did drugs. Barack Obama even wrote about it in his book, Dreams of My Father, you know, that they did marijuana, cocaine, alcohol. You know, if one of them would have served any time in jail, guess what? There's no way Barack Obama would be president today.
Right.
You know, what he said was, look, the last two presidents could conceivably have been put in jail for their drug use, and I really think, look what would have happened. It would have ruined their lives. They got lucky. But a lot of poor kids, particularly in the inner city, don't get lucky. They don't have good attorneys, and they go to jail for these things, and that's a big mistake. So, you know, and Rand Paul is right in that. So that's the real issue here, is how do we get, you know, control of what's really, really going on here? I don't know. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to get into some other issues. Joe Biden is out talking gun control again, and I think you guys are really going to love this. But we'll be right back. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View.
Else. That's what our politicians do every day. And in America, people have followed suit. Don't know why. They just have.
Yep.
Dale. Man, there's always something going on.
Yep.
You know, this gun control vote is getting ready to come up. So I thought it'd be a timely time to bring this up. But it was really interesting because Joe Biden was out making his speeches as usual. You know, but he said earlier today that the upcoming Senate votes on gun control are only the beginning of the White House's fight.
Yeah.
You know, now, we've talked about this. I mentioned it again last night. There's no way that they're going to get a limit on assault weapons. There's no way they're going to get a limit on high-capacity magazines, period. Those are done. They're not going to be part of the Senate bill. The Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has said that he's going to let these be come up and be offered as amendments for his Democratic colleagues so they can go back in these closed states and claim that they tried just to get votes. In other words, it's all political pandering. There's nothing there. Even Reid said they don't have enough support to pass anything along that line.
Nope.
So this is nothing more than political posturing to try to keep Democrats in the seat instead of doing their damn job. But it's interesting because Biden keeps talking about how this is the beginning of the process, the beginning of the fight. Yeah, my problem is this. They're still using this Connecticut shooting.
And
I'm sorry, you know, don't get me wrong, folks. Sandy Hook, all that was a terrible mess. But that doesn't give you the right to come after my gun. He's talking about the courage that was demonstrated by the teachers, you know. And, you know, we don't have the same courage. We don't demand the same courage out of our elected officials. You know, they have to have the courage to stand up and take responsible action to end this senseless violence. Well, the reality is, Mr. Vice President, that you're not going to end this senseless violence until you fix this country along some other routes. You know, economic opportunity, jobs. You know, let's get some mental health providers out there.
Well,
you're not going to stop.
Right. And you ask Joe Biden, is that the same courage that it takes to have Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, request now billions of rounds of ammunition? I mean, is that the courage he's talking about? Because we were talking off air there that they want to get all these personal defense weapons, 7,000 of them. Of course, they'd be called terrorist assault weapons if we owned them.
Well, funny
and 2,700 mine-resistant armored vehicles with little gun holes in them. What the hell are those for, Ed?
Well, that's exactly my point, Dale, and I'm glad you said that, because in the last year, a little over a year now, the federal government, Department of Homeland Security, has bought up 1.6 billion rounds, not million, folks, 1.6 billion rounds of handgun ammo. They just announced plans to buy up another 360,000 hollow point rounds.
Yep.
You know, we look at this, the ammo that they have on hand right now, they admit that they use 15 million rounds per year for training. The amount of ammunition they have on hand right now will sustain a war for 27 years, the size of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yep.
A daily war continuous for 27 years. It will also kill every American more than, it will allow more than 5 shots into every American. Every single American, man, woman, and child, can be shot 5 times with this ammo in one day. So we look at that, and then, of course, you brought up the 2,700 light armored tanks. But here's why this is so interesting, because during his speech, Biden actually, you know, it was a call, and Biden actually used these words. He kept repeating over and over that this was just the beginning of the issue for the White House. But then he went on to say, "We believe that weapons of war have no place on our streets." That's what makes all that come right
back. And get rid of all the drones, Joe.
Exactly. Get rid of the drones. There's an interesting link that I put up on my Facebook page today. You can find me at Louisville Politics on Facebook. And there's an interesting link up there that I put up there today about these drones as well. It was a study that came out of Pakistan, and they show a timeline study of all the drone attacks. Everybody wanted to talk about George Bush and the drone attacks. George Bush didn't do 1/20th. Of what Barack Obama has done in his first 5 years. George Bush hasn't done his first 4.5 years. George Bush didn't do the whole 8 years he was in office. You know, and you're looking at all these attacks. But in the Pakistani example, they were showing these attacks by drone attacks in Pakistan.
Yep.
It killed over 3,000 people, less than 1.5%. Less than 1.5% of those were the insurgents. The rest were women and children and innocent civilians. So, you know, now they're putting the drones over American soil. They've went out and purchased 2,700 light armored tanks that they're going to put on the streets. They're already on the streets now in some places, including Arizona. They've bought up 1.6 billion bullets, mostly 40 cal and 9 mil. They're buying up another 360,000 rounds, hollow points. You know, when the end times get close for government, most people know this. History has told us. When the people start getting to the point where they've got to have an uprising, the government takes all the weapons. We've seen that in every historical situation since the beginning of time. Once the weapons are gone, the people have nothing to fight back with. Is that what we're looking at right now?
Well, I do think there's a lot to that. And again, the Homeland Security Department, let's just focus on the ammunition issue with what they've bought. The excuses they give are ridiculous. They talk about, oh, training facilities burn through a lot of ammo, and then they say the government's just taking advantage of bulk pricing. And I hope nobody buys that garbage, because I know a Natural News examination just of the FBO website found the government's purchases are fairly recent. And the bottom line, you talked about the 40 caliber, and you got the ammunition. The fragile bullets are designed to break apart when they strike a hard object like a wall. And so just focus on ammunition for a minute. Government ammunition solicitations began to increase dramatically like 3 years ago when they started requesting the 50 to 75 million rounds. And like you say, now we've culminated in billions of rounds. What part of our government actively fights wars? I thought it was the Pentagon, so why does Homeland Security have more ammunition than the Pentagon, Ed?
Well, that's a damn good question, Dale, and that's the one thing that we continue asking time and time again, because, you know, we continue having them doing these major buildups. You know, we've got Biden out there saying we don't need this on our streets, yet the government is the one who's putting this on our streets. We're not. We're not putting this. And I think it really comes back, and I think it really comes back to something I mentioned again last night. You know, when President Barack Obama was running for office in 2008, he gave a speech in Colorado. He gave a speech in Colorado in July of 2008. And what he said was, we cannot continue to rely on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian and national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, and just as well-funded. And I think this is what they're doing. I think that they are putting together this civilian national security force to take over America's streets. What you're essentially leading yourself to is martial law in America everywhere. This is a no-brainer to me, the road we're going down. The question is, how do we stop it?
Well, like I said, if they want to just stick with their stupid little lie about that they're buying up all this ammunition because it's bulk pricing. If that was the case, you already talked about the hollow points. Hollow points are not used generally for target practice because they're so much more expensive. So if they're trying to buy at bulk rates to save money, what's the purpose of ordering so many hollow points? And I agree with you totally. It's about the prison plan mentality here. They want to take over the country by whatever means. Look at when Obama ran for president and talked about having a voluntary military that basically do all his bidding for him. So the problem is, we know a lot of our own military, just like the Oath Keepers, that group talks about, would not turn their guns on their own people. But they've been playing around that for a long time. When you have the powder blue berets of the United Nations training in our country for years and years now, those people come over here from Europe or Asia or Africa, they don't give a damn if they kill your mom or your wife or your kids, but they know that the American people are not going to turn on their own. So they have to have these training exercises with foreign governments here. And it used to be that was just conspiracy nut stuff when I brought this up. It can all be researched.
Well, it's interesting, too, because what they're doing is they basically starve the American people, where you've got people out there, and I think the TSA is full of them, you know, the guys that like to grope old women and babies, you know, going through an airport. But, you know, you look at this, you've got people out there that will sell their soul to the devil just for some perceived power that they think they're going to get. And I think ultimately you're seeing a lot of that mentality in America today. Let's go to the phones. Andy, how are you, sir?
Hey, how are you guys doing, man?
Greetings.
Doing fantastic. What's on your mind, my brother?
Oh, man, I came in halfway in the show. I heard you talking about this ammunition thing. I was, you know, I'm just concerned all the way around. I sat in for Luther Brown today on his gun nut show. I didn't do it the way he would do it, but you know,
okay.
we're talking about these three black guys that snuffed each other out. I told him, I said, I can't see that as homicide anymore. That's genocide. But the part that's fascinating to me is that the mothers are telling their cousins and nephews and nieces not to kill each other. I mean, they got a full blown beef going on Facebook right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, to me, it's not the guns. I mean, but you know, you're talking about what Biden and these people say. It's a young lady. I don't know if you ever listened to him, you or Dale. I would love to see Dale debate her. Call on Sundays on 970, that roundtable they do. They got this young lady from Germany, and I would like to know who she feels is responsible for her personal safety.
I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I did hear her for a few minutes on the show. What was even more frightening, Andy, is the fact that when they got around to stuff like the drones and like us being in other countries, the so-called conservatives on that show were talking about how wonderful it was that we were in other countries. So that was the one thing I guess I'd agree with her about, because she was talking about how we shouldn't be empire building around the world. But it would be an interesting debate.
Well, you know,
I agree with you guys. We need to bring our toys home and quit playing with other people.
Yep.
I'm not xenophobic, but you know what I am? I'm tired. I shouldn't force you to like me. Okay?
Well, you know, I'm more concerned, I'm not as concerned with the criminal element on the streets. I've walked through some of the worst areas in Louisville, all right? And I've walked through some of the worst areas in Louisville, never been approached, never been bothered, you know? But the one person that I depend on for my safety and security would be a Louisville police officer, and this dumbass arrested me and made up false charges that I beat last week. I am more concerned of government people in power than I am any criminal element on the street. And when they want to take over our guns and everything else, that's exactly what the Second Amendment was set up to do, was to help us protect ourselves and provide our safety for ourselves, regardless of who that enemy is. And it doesn't matter if that enemy has a badge, if they're an elected official, or if they're a drug lord downtown. I mean, it doesn't matter. We have that
responsibility. I agree with you. That goes without saying. I'm just saying that I'm tired of fighting a battle on two fronts. When you got people that literally, I mean, if you listen to this young lady talk, she would literally believe it. If you just had an IQ above 90, you wouldn't need a weapon. It blows my mind. And it's this European mindset is taking root here in America. It's just, you know, her thing is all of a sudden America's going to join hopefully we can get you to join the civilized rest part of the world. Now, I'm like, ain't that a bitch?
I always love that argument for two reasons. One, if it's coming from somebody in Germany, you know they're full of garbage, because these guys willingly gave Hitler their guns, and look where it led them. Okay? We're willingly,
you know,
they're trying to get us to willingly give up our guns here. That's a European mindset. Then you look at the United
States. Well, the thing that scared me after listening to her for a couple of times, I come to find out homeschooling is illegal in Germany and in Sweden. It's blowing my mind, man. I mean, why don't one of you guys invent a spaceship or something so we can lead a planet? This is kind of, you know, I mean, seriously, I mean, either send the liberals away or can we lead them to this mess? I mean, it's just one or the other. I mean, the problem is
we the people. I mean, you know, I would love to sit here and continue blaming the liberals for all the messes we're in. But it's not liberals' fault. It's not conservatives' fault. It's the Uniparty. They're both to blame. You know, just because the liberals want something doesn't mean they have to get it.
Right.
You know, just because the conservatives want something doesn't mean they have to get it. But unfortunately, when most of these idiots get elected, they get that taste of power. They get that taste of being able to do anything they want to. They essentially think they're above the law, and truthfully, they are. Look at how many Congress people never go to jail or anything else. People like Rod Blagojevich out of Chicago, or the governor of Illinois out of Chicago. I mean, this guy went to jail, and so did the governor before him. But it's a little bit different story. You know, sometimes these smaller guys can be thrown away, because when you get to the federal level, let's look at William Jefferson Clinton down in Arkansas, who got caught with the cash in the freezer. He never suffered for it. He kept his job. You know, we look at these things. People get this little taste of power. They get this little taste of feeling like they're above the law, and they take it to the next extreme. It's no longer about you. It's about what they can gain for themselves. And these lobbyists know that. That's why we spend hundreds of millions of dollars every year lobbying Congress. Look at the medical device thing that just happened, for goodness sake. They decided as part of Obamacare they were going to add a 2.3% sales tax on selling catheters, MRI machines, and everything else. If I'm a business owner, and I am, you know, I've got to pay taxes when I buy my computer. I've got to pay sales tax. I've got to pay a sales tax for all my equipment. You know, do I get to write it off? You know, sure I do. I get to write off the expense of it, but I still have to pay those sales taxes. But these people spent millions of dollars, bought them a couple of congressmen, so that they wouldn't have to pay a 2.3% sales tax. Well, I've got to pay a 6% sales tax right here in Kentucky. That's wrong. It's wrong. You know, but that's what happens when you have the money and the bucks to make that happen. So, you know, the Uniparty is alive and well. The real people to blame here are we the people. Every one of us collectively are the problem. We continue to be allowed to get ourselves vital.
Guys, I told y'all last year that we should have built in a 5% hustle law. You can steal 5%. And if you start stealing above that, we're taking you out. It's just that simple.
I don't know. Here in Kentucky, I think that number is closer to 15%, but that's just my opinion. You know, so we've got to continue here. So that's where we're at.
Let me just weigh in on this. You all talk about the taxes. Remember, if you look at major cities, there is just a...
Andy,
you
still there?
I hope they can hear me.
Cut me off, guys. I'm getting ready to go on someplace noise.
All right. Andy's cut off. We had the background noise. Go ahead, Dale.
Okay, I was just going to say, you know, we're talking about the taxes. You can't remember, if you look at major cities, there was just a poll put out, a research poll, that said Louisville is in the top 6 or 7 cities in the country for taxation when you add up all the levels of taxation. And then you got little Greg Fisher, the mayor, wants to add another tax on top of that. So that's the reason so many people are leaving Louisville. It's a lot easier to vote with your feet and leave and go to Oldham or Bullitt County than it is to stand and fight these morons.
Well, and Kentucky is also in the top 5 for states for taxation, too. This is why you don't get jobs in Louisville, Kentucky.
No, they all go
to Indiana.
It's
just not
going to
happen. Right. It's just not going to happen. That's what made it an easy deal. If you remember a story that came out 2 days ago, you know, Indiana, there's some elected officials over in Indiana who are trying to find a way to go ahead and put up a bond to pay for Kentucky's unfunded liability for the bridges, you know, so they don't have to toll I-65. Because they know that if they toll I-65, it's going to affect Indiana business. Indiana business
jobs.
Booming.
Yeah, look at all the new jobs we hear come out every week in Indiana.
Sure, sure. And that's why.
And I come from Kentucky.
No, that's because our idiots here don't want to look at the big picture. But, you know, getting back to what we're talking about, though, we get back into gun control and all the other stuff. We know about the DHS. We know Joe Biden is sitting out there saying we shouldn't have this stuff on the streets, but we do. The federal government are the ones that are doing it. They're basically buying up 360,000 rounds of ammo because that's all the ammo that's going to be available to buy right now for handguns. These suppliers are so far behind on orders, every time they get a shipment in, the federal government buys it up.
Right.
So people on the street can't get it. Thank God I've got a stockpile. I can tell you that right now. But what's really interesting here is let's look at the people who are screaming for gun control.
Yep.
Let's look at Mayor Bloomberg, for example. Mayor Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, out of New York City. You know, he travels all the time. He went to Bermuda. Bermuda, guns are outlawed. In Bermuda, you don't have guns. They're basically prohibited. The police don't even carry guns there. All right? But Mayor Michael Bloomberg travels to Bermuda, and he takes his own fully armed security detail with him.
Yep.
So Bloomberg travels with a fully armed security detail, and it's okay for him to have guns, but not for me. You know, so he gets a special exemption when he goes to Bermuda, for example, so his guards can carry guns. Now, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Why should he be allowed to have guns? You tell me. I don't know. You know, North Dakota Representative Heidi Heitkamp basically called out the hypocrisy. She said that North Dakota continues to have one of the highest rates of gun ownership, and yet they have the lowest incidence of gun crime in the country, and they do. She's out of Grand Forks. I lived in Grand Forks for 4 years. Believe me, you don't have these kind of problems. But she goes on to say...
Plus, if you're out there, Ed, since you lived up there, you know it's a whole different terrain and plane, and you have a far, far fewer number of neighbors around you than you do in Louisville, Kentucky, and they know... You know, you might expect the policeman to be there when you call them. I know if I call a police officer, they might get here in an hour and a half because that's just how slow the damn police are. But out there, they know it's up to them to defend themselves. There ain't no police coming out in the middle of nowhere in 10 degrees below zero.
Well, you don't need them in 10 degrees below zero, trust me. But
they know that if something happens, if something crazy happens, whether it's domestic dispute or robbery or fire, they know the fire department's not going to get out in the middle of nowhere, too. That's the whole... collective planning thing.
They still have the criminal element in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Believe me, I mean, they still got the drug dealers and the drugs and everything else. The other stuff that goes on.
I like Louisville.
But those guys don't break into your house because they don't know if you're going to have a gun on the other side. They don't want to get killed, all right? And she goes on to say, Heidi Heitkamp goes on to say that, you know, that they have one of the lowest incidents of gun crime in the country, yet New York City Michael Bloomberg insist on taking gun-driven crime stats in his city and from other major cities like Detroit, Chicago, and he's trying to force those numbers into a narrative that just doesn't fit North Dakota. And I think that that ultimately is what it comes down to. When we get into the gun control situation, you know, if you've got to have gun control, that should be a state-decided thing. North Dakota knows what they need for gun control. They know what works for their crime. You know, New York City and Michael Bloomberg, these guys are one of the highest crime places in the country. So why is it that North Dakota has lower crime than New York City? Don't tell me it's the amount of people, because when you talk about the crime rate, you know, that's already factored in.
Well, you know, we'll get in trouble if we say a lot of it has to do with demographics, and that's kind of a tease for tomorrow night. But we know that there's a lot of black-on-white crime in Louisville, Kentucky, and I don't think there's a lot of, heck, I don't think they even have any black people in North Dakota. It's kind of like New Hampshire. So there's a lot of social aspects of it, but then there's also, like you said, and like I said, it's collective planning. It's the people who run these areas. They wouldn't let those politicians in there. How long did the Democrat Party run Louisville, Kentucky? Yeah, they wouldn't let those idiots into power out there.
Well, you know, demographics aside, because, you know, the only difference between, you know, drug crimes in Louisville is, you know, in a predominantly black population, people are getting killed over crack and meth. And a predominantly white population, they're fighting over cocaine. So it's still the same problem, demographics aside. But, you know, when you look at this, though, it's the hypocrisy that's killing me. You look at people like Bloomberg who are out there talking about we shouldn't have any guns, we don't need any guns, blah, blah, blah. But he's willing to pay top dollar for an armed security force to go with him everywhere. So they've got guns. He don't have to worry about carrying a gun.
No.
Because he paid security to do it. I can't afford to do that. You can't afford to do that.
No.
You look at people like Jim Carrey. This idiot nut job goes out there and starts attacking gun owners, you know, on his Twitter account and everything else, going out there just getting totally insane, you know, talking about gun owners. Yet this guy has an armed bodyguard that goes with him everywhere.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is he going to provide, if he wants to provide bodyguards for all those gun owners that he insults, you know what? I bet a lot of them would be much happier if they had a bodyguard they could trust, so they wouldn't have to worry about taking care of, maintaining their guns. Some people just collect the guns. I mean, the people who hate guns and fear them, they're so scared of them, but it's the same mentality. The people that call themselves liberals, quote-unquote, they'll say, well, if you don't like abortions, don't have one, but they want them legal for everybody, and they are to a certain degree, but yet guns, they don't want them legal, even though it's just them that has a problem with them. It's like, you ever notice the people who hate guns the most are the ones that need to be gun-smacked around with a gun?
Well, that's you're right. I mean, that's exactly it, you know. But we continue giving mouth service, lip service, letting these idiots like Bloomberg, an elected official, and then a nut job out of Hollywood who's actually lives in Canada, he's a Canadian citizen, Jim Carrey, you know, these guys get all the voice. Then you got your lunatics out there like George Clooney. You know, why is it that Hollywood all of a sudden is to be taken serious when it comes to issues like gun control, religious freedom, abortion, all the crazy stuff? Why do people have a tendency to take Hollywood actors and actresses who are clueless, just like our little Ashley Judd?
Yep.
You know, why do they continue taking these people serious? I mean, that's how dumbed down.
Well, they worship them like gods, but they don't think about the fact that these people are paid millions to pretend. That's the thing. You got to remember, these people are paid millions and millions per bad movie they put out to pretend to be somebody, but they worship them like gods. And the media, we know our news today is not really news. It's mostly gossip and glamour. And I have worked with people. Thank God I'm not friends with these people, but I have worked with people that you watch them, and over their shoulder, they're always going to these stupid gossip websites and pop bullshit websites to find out about their latest celebrity. I don't give a damn what these celebrities do in their private time, but so many people are just obsessed with them. They're like their gods.
Well, you know, and that's exactly it. I don't understand it either. I wish I did. I really don't understand it at all. And then, of course, we've got serious issues out there. You know, I don't know if you've seen the story on Secretary of State John Kerry yet. We're going to try to get this in real quick before we run out, because this is very, very interesting. Because John Kerry was greeting the Iranian people last week, and he went bragging about the fact that his daughter is married to an Iranian who has extensive family ties to Iran. Now, I don't know about you guys, but that is a very serious concern to me, that my Secretary of State is traveling around to places like Iran, who we're supposedly getting ready to go to war with over nuclear facilities. We've been playing this game for years and years and years. His daughter is married to an Iranian who has extensive family ties to Iran. And John Kerry is over there bragging about how this Iranian-American has influenced his life so much, you know. But what's really interesting here is that this is what I don't get about Congress. Our Congress knows this, or they should have known this when they got the packet to go through whether on whether to let him have this job or not. But the FBI, since the very beginning of the FBI, has vetted every U.S. government official involved in national security issues. The Secretary of State is the biggest U.S. official in national security issues. He travels around the world on behalf of the U.S. But in most cases, practically all cases, the FBI has never granted clearances to individuals who are married to nationals of an enemy nation or have family members living in that country. Clearly, it's because they're worried about divided loyalties or blackmail. So here we've got John Kerry's daughter with extensive family ties through her husband to Iran, who was given a top-secret clearance so he could travel around the place and go to Iran. And this isn't a problem. It's always been a problem. Why is it not a problem now?
Well, the government, they make their own rules. I mean, remember, they're the elected chosen few. If they were elected by us, they were then handpicked by someone above them, above all of us, to put them up for election. So they're better than we are. You ask them, they'll tell you. They're not servants. They don't have anywhere near a servant's heart. They believe it's your job to serve them. And again, they got to throw some crumbs of the table to the poor people, like Andy's talked about himself, to get a certain mentality, a certain demographic to vote for them. As long as they throw them a few crumbs, they'll keep saying, those are our gods. I mean, it's just like something out of myth gods. If you look at the fact that people thought the gods were going to give them something, oh, it rained, so now we got to give the gods a sacrifice because they gave us rain. The government gives you nothing, but like I've said so many times, they will break your leg and then sell you a crutch and say, aren't you glad we gave you a crutch so you can walk now?
Well, and I agree with that, but this is really interesting because, you know, we all have to talk about the Uniparty.
Yep.
Is what it really boils down to. And so many times we're accused of being liberal bashers, and we continue trying to defuse that. And in this particular case, John Kerry was unanimously approved to be Secretary of State. It's no big deal. You know, the Republicans were involved in that, and nobody talked about this.
Nope.
Nobody even brought this to the table as a concern. And that should be the biggest, most alarming concern to all of us. What did the Republicans sell out for this guy for? Mayo, you're right. Go ahead, buddy.
Oh, well, hopefully this will get, like, Dale's blood pressure down. Ashley, that's what I said. Had a little news earlier. Ashley Judd twittered that she would not be running.
Yep. Ed and I talked about that off air. I've said all along that she wouldn't run, but it does make her sleep a little better, I guess.
Well, you know, yeah. It's crazy right now. Ashley Judd, we kind of thought, wouldn't run. And we always talked about she was going to be the red herring. But what it did do, it made everybody, I mean, this was nothing but the red herring so they could float out Alison Lundgren Grimes' name and see what kind of reaction they got on that. So, you know,
yeah.
But it's fascinating because I continue looking at the things that are going on in this country, and it's really alarming to me. It's really alarming to me. And the fact that John Kerry can get this kind of a situation, you know, we've got to really start asking questions. I can't understand why the American people have become so lackadaisical that we're allowing this kind of crap to continue. But I also can't understand where this hour went because we're about out of time. Dale, final thoughts, my friend.
Well, you talk about the government officials, and we talk about who is and isn't running for office, but these people are going to keep doing what they do as long as you keep electing them. And we know the Uniparty is a big problem. I had a discussion with a gentleman who was in a third party the other day, and I asked him, think about how the world of politics, or at least the United States politics and our political system, would be different if the Libertarian Party or any party that believed in the Constitution was automatically on equal level with the Democrats and Republicans. Because then it couldn't be, we did X because you did Y, we did Y because you did X. This hemp issue we just talked about, Gatewood Galbraith was pushing this issue for 30-some years. And Gatewood would often, the late, great Gatewood Galbraith, who's a friend of mine, he would often stand in debates and say, I agree with what the Republicans just said about the Democrats that was bad, and I agree with what the Democrats just said about the Republicans that was bad. And Gatewood always looked into the camera and said, if I was going to lie to you, I would already been elected. And that's the bottom line. We got to stake out our claim the way Gatewood be. And Gatewood himself, who stood in front of the United Nations float in Lexington one year and tell them death to the New World Order.
You know, I'm glad you brought up Gatewood, because I was actually going to touch on that for a second in my closing. You know, this whole industrial hemp bill in Kentucky would not have even been a starting point to talk about if not for the efforts of Gatewood Galbraith over the last 30 years. Gatewood has to be looking down on Kentucky right now and smiling. I mean, he really does. He has to be smiling, knowing that this was all because of his efforts. Nobody ever talked about this but Gatewood Galbraith. Legalizing marijuana, industrial hemp. You know, they've talked about industrial hemp in the past, and they didn't even make that a real serious talk until the last governor election, and Gatewood made industrial hemp the focus. So, you know, you got to give credit to where it's due, and Gatewood was a driving force behind that. Yep. Now let's hope that this governor and our federal people like Rand Paul, Mitch McConnell, and John Yarmuth, who have all promised to do something to help Kentucky if we pass this legislation, let's hope they all do their job and Kentucky finally gets to move forward. And when we do, we should all be saying thank you to Gatewood Galbraith. And, you know, that's pretty interesting how it took 30 years to get here. Because what I'm seeing today, the fight Gatewood was in was just for one individual issue. The fight that we as America are in is for one individual issue. And that issue is a simple one. We're fighting for freedom and liberty. You know, freedom and liberty, that's it. We don't want government tyranny. We don't want martial law. We don't want to fight our brothers against brother. We've done that before in our history. You know, we have one issue that we have to face that we can face together. But we've got to get over these hang-ups and this I've got to be right at all cost mentality and start really having a discussion. Gatewood proved it took 30 years to get industrial hemp even on a plate. We don't have 30 years to try to get our freedoms back. They're being eroded every day, and it's like freedom on steroids today being taken away.
Yep.
You have got to get involved, folks. You've got to make a difference. And the way you make a difference is to stand up and demand to be counted and say, my view matters. And make sure they know it does. You know, elections are important. If you don't think so, take a look around you. Because the same people that are in office today, most of them have been there for many, many years. Has your life gotten better or worse? For most of America, the answer is an obvious one. It's gotten worse. So let's try to make it better. And we do that by changing the landscape. We did that with Rand Paul. We've done it with Tom Massey. Let's take even more changes in the next election. That's it for tonight. Dale, what's on tap for tomorrow?
Well, you and I talked a little bit off air about this, and it's one of those not-so-light, touchy-feely stories. It's a serious issue, and it's not politically correct. We're going to talk a little bit tomorrow night about race and crime. And the reason this was brought up is up in Towson, Maryland, where a student on campus is just being called all kinds of names because he's basically stating statistics about which group of race commits a incredibly one-sided number of violent acts against another race. So it's not politically correct, and our show never is, and that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow night, a little bit about race and crime. Should be a good time.
Well, it should be a good time. I actually read the story today on Towson University out of there, and you know, it's really fascinating to me when you look at the players involved and what the mainstream media actually doesn't talk about. If you look at the black-on-white crimes and the mass violence going on across America today, so that ought to be a good show. I'll be tuning in myself. That's it for tonight, folks. Don't forget to check out Dale the Truth tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Right here on the MVM Radio Network, and our good friend Ken Moltmann with Liberty Unbridled Sunday night at 7. Have a great night. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you later.